Welcome to the Ugly Podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Alexander, she, they, and this is the place where creatives are encouraged to make messy, ugly art and let go of perfectionism. I started this podcast with my creative partner, Emerson, and we've since grown into our businesses, and this podcast is now evolving into a space where I interview other creatives to discuss our creative processes and how we navigate the mental minefield of creativity. This podcast serves as a reminder that you and your art get to be whatever the hell you want to be, ugly and all. Okay. Welcome back to the Ugly Podcast. I'm really excited about this episode today. this person I'm about to introduce to you is the person that I wanted to bring on to the Ugly Podcast as soon as I started interviewing people. I'm really excited about this. She is an artist, writer, and accidental astrologer from Calgary, where she lives with her husband and cat and has been making art for nearly a decade. And a few years ago, she stopped making realistic portraits and started letting her personality come through her work, which is why she's just so perfect for the Ugly Podcast and to come here. So welcome. Can you please just introduce yourself with your name and your pronouns, please?
Hello. Hi. I'm Heather Buchanan. She, her. Thank you so much for having me, Lauren. I'm so excited to be here.
Yay. Oh, this is just so good. Like, your art, it touches a place in me that, like, brings me back to doing Mad Libs with my best friend at her lake cabin. Just, like, trying to pull out the most random, silly things we can possibly muster and just making ourselves crack up forever and always. And that is what your art does for me. And I just love it so much. I told you I wouldn't gush too much, but that's the extent of it. I'll stop.
I haven't thought about Mad Libs in a really long time, but that is totally the vibe. Like, just trying to make it weird, trying to, like, let the oddity flow and trying to have some strangeness. Yes. Do they still make Mad Libs?
I hope so. I want to do them now.
they were really fun. I want to find some and then go on a really long drive and just, like,
Oh, so good. So I want to kind of, over the course of our conversation, I'd love to talk about, like, how your art has evolved, and I don't know, just, like, how your process has been with that. Because I think, like, at least for me, the realization that my art can be whatever I want it to be and that I can lean into my own personality was, like, the biggest realization and made me realize, like, oh, I actually have some creativity in me. Like, I didn't think of myself as a creative person before that. So I'm really curious, like, what was your relationship to art before that shift when you were in your early days of art? Like, how did you start getting into making portraits? What was that like?
Yeah, so I think my relationship to art was very much having it be a career and having it sort of be something that I needed to make a living with. I really didn't want to be stuck in an office. I had a lot of anxiety and had battled depression so much as like a teenager, and a lot of it had to do with being at school, and when I tried to hold down jobs and whatnot, I was so miserable, and the one thing I could always do was to make art. And so I really, really relied on art as a career, because I could do that, and I could not, you know, I could do that. And I'm trying not to get too bleak here. I could do that and be okay. So, so basically, you know, making art was something I really needed to rely on for an income. And so I did sort of suppress my own personality in it a lot. Not completely. Like, there was always a sense of humor in it, and always a bit of me in everything I made. I always came back to a part of myself, or it always sprung from something in me, but it was, you know, there's just the volume was turned way, way, way down. And sort of, you know, the question of would it sell was always, you know, way, way at the front. And it was always, you know, I made a lot of sort of pop culture related work, and a lot of, you know, funny sort of puns and greeting cards and things that, you know, just were like really, really commercial. And, you know, so my relationship was very much, you know, just sort of like leaning into what would sell from a purely survival standpoint.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Especially, you know, I think it served me really well because it allowed me to sort of build up an audience for the first several years of my career and allowed me to sort of make a name for myself. And even though that sort of, you know, then makes it harder to pivot because you know, you sort of get known for doing certain things. And it sort of makes it, you know, sort of harder to ever shake that reputation as the person that does blank, you know.
Right.
It also, there are benefits to it because I did spend a lot of years really honing my technical skills as, you know, if you want to like paint portraits of celebrities, you better, you know, actually get some chops painting portraits, because it actually has to look like them if anyone's going to buy them. But, you know, so there are all these like wonderful advantages, and, you know, you also get to make, work of the, you know, the movies, the pop culture people that, you know, that I'm into and that I think are funny or interesting in some way, which is really fun. And then you get to interact with people who are also fans of the same thing. So it creates all these sorts of wonderful connections in those ways, which is wonderful. Yeah. But yeah, there was definitely always sort of a bit of an emptiness and a bit of like sort of a nagging feeling of it. Not quite, you know, not being enough. Yeah, there was just something missing always.
Yeah. Yeah, that element of just like, you're always, it's always in the back of your mind of this has to make me money. And so there's a certain pressure on your art at all times.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. It's a lot of weight to put on art and on creating, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So then, when did you start to develop your own style with the noseless faces and then eventually horror scoops? How did that come to be?
Yeah, so it was, I guess, about 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago now. The noseless faces, yeah. So I knew I wanted to sort of, yeah, so there was that, like, you know, nagging feeling of having more to say and knowing that I just really needed to start making work that was more myself. And I know people who, you know, make pop culture work and who don't have that, who are like fully satisfied by doing that. So, you know, it's definitely not something everyone feels, but I felt it. I absolutely felt nagged to like get messy and get weird and fully express all the nonsense going on in my brain. And yeah, so I really started just like drawing like 2 hours a day of just drawing like face after face after face, trying to figure out like what it was going to be, what was going to be different in my own style. And I also had this like maybe like 2 week period where I was just, I took like all these like, you know, like canvas boards, like just the kind of cheap canvas panels. Yeah. And I painted like the same character, like this, she had the same expression and hair color and sort of type of features, but I gave her sort of different, you know, she was just like in a different style in about like 30 different paintings. Like it was absolutely insane. I like laid them all out. And I was just trying to figure out like in each one, what was interesting and what wasn't and what sort of seemed derivative of a different style. And, you know, I was just like painting over and over and over and trying to just like figure out all this work that like no one will ever see. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was just like really trying to develop a style that felt like me and felt unique and felt original. And I was trying to not look at a lot of other people's art at that time and trying to not absorb too much of other people. Because I, you know, like we are sponges. We are,
right. Yeah.
You know, human tofu, you know, we take on the flavors of everything around us. it's a weird way of putting it, but, you know,
human tofu, I love it.
Yes, we are. Something like that. So, you know, I was just trying to like come up with all these different things, and yeah, I think a lot of people who have, you know, have gone through this, or like some people have just like always had a style since they were young, but yeah, I definitely, like, I don't know about you, but like I don't know. I didn't. I like squashed a lot of my own originality in myself at a young age.
Yeah.
Like I like killed that in myself to try mm-hmm. to fit in. So, you know, I had to like recover it at an older age, you know? So yeah. So it was a long process and a lot of trial and error and a lot of experimenting until I found things that felt right. And there was a period of it feeling like nothing was ever going to feel like me. And it was mm-hmm. like the hopeless feeling of like, I'm just going to like be painting faces forever and nothing's going to feel right. Until yeah. finally there were some like breakthrough moments of like, oh, this feels weird. This is interesting. Ooh, this is exciting. Oh my. And yeah, so that was, it actually happened, which was exciting because there were weeks where it was like, oh, this is never going to happen and I'm never going to have a style and hopeless. But no, it worked.
That's very encouraging. I'm still like discovering my style just because like my creative journey has been so new. I mean, I only realized I was a creative person like 2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And so like, I love hearing you say this. It makes me feel so hopeful.
Yes.
like there is like, I can continue exploring this and I will like find yes. something that speaks to me. It's just yeah. like, that's just part of the process. And it's so funny that we're just like, no, this is how it's going to be forever. This is my right. life. We never we never leave room for that expansion and that change because we're always just like, no, this is just how it's going to be.
Right.
Or like so resigned.
Yeah, or like there's that like mythology, like you just have a style, like it's just there and you
right
have it and it's like ingrained in you, like no, you've got to like keep exploring, keep finding,
you gotta find it. Yeah,
yeah, get curious, you know, dig around, root around in there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Yes, that brings me so much hope.
Yeah, I'm glad because like yeah, there were definitely some like dark moments of it feeling like it wasn't gonna ever sort of congeal into anything. And what's really interesting, I think, is the things that aesthetically felt right, like the noselessness, mm-hmm. that just like something felt really good about that, and I didn't know why. And then as I like worked with that, I realized that like the faces without noses looked like they were having like a panic attack, like they were having trouble breathing.
Yeah.
And then like that, like so having had this whole history with anxiety and panic, but also being a total silly pants goofball, these faces work on both those levels of like mm-hmm. having this like serious element of sort of expressing something about mental illness, and then but they also look absolutely bananas, so so they work on these two levels, and there's this push and pull of the serious and the silly, and they just feel right. So it's mm-hmm. it's so interesting that, you know, sort of aesthetically there's something interesting about them to me, but then also conceptually they say exactly what I want to say. So it's just mm-hmm. it's so interesting how that works out, you know. There's that like creative magic thing that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how else to explain it, you know?
Creative magic. That's what it is. So was there anyone or anything going on in particular? I mean, you said 3 to 4 years ago, so I can guess what was happening in the world at that time. But anything that inspired you to be like, no, you know what? I'm at my wit's end. Like, I can't keep doing this. I need to lean into my silliness. I need to lean into my style, rather than trying to paint what other people want to see. Was there someone or something in particular that like pushed you in that direction?
Yeah. Well, I had gotten into a car accident at the time. So I was,
oh, like, different. I was thinking of like, you know, COVID, and I'm just like, you know, we're stuck inside.
This was before pre-COVID. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha.
I think I'm in that like headspace where I don't know what years mean right now. I should like draw out a timeline. I'm really bad in general at knowing how many years anything has been. Yeah. yeah. COVID like minus 2 years, like 2 years.
Gotcha. Pre-COVID. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Don't, if I say anything has been a certain number of years, just don't touch me.
Okay.
it's not gonna be accurate. Yeah, okay, you're right. I guess it's been 5 years. Wow. Yeah. Okay, now I'm attempting. My first instinct there was to be like, you haven't done enough in the past 5 years. Yeah. That's a you know, that internal voice, that internal critic who's just always a big jerk. We're just gonna ignore that voice.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm happy to refute that voice for you and point out all of the amazing things that I've seen from you just in like the year and a half that I followed you. So,
but you know, that voice is there. You just gotta be like, hello, hello, internal jerk.
Oh,
like,
hi there.
Yeah. The voice that says you're never enough. Nice. Thanks for coming out. Okay, you can go away now. Anyway. Yeah. So I had been in like a car accident and I was like stuck on the couch with like whiplash for a really long time. And so I think there was just like a bit of like self-reflection and some like reevaluating and, you know, just sort of like, you know, being in like some pain and some like just like hanging out with your own thoughts there. And so I think that's sort of like what immediately preceded making some changes. And, you know, so it had kind of messed up my shoulders and I couldn't like paint for a while. And so I think it kind of like anything that makes you like take some time away, you know, I think can lead to those big reflections and some changes. So yeah, that kind of like led to that big change. And I think it's also easier, if I'm being like really, really honest, it's easier to make those big changes because you sort of like have that like built-in excuse. Because then it's like, oh, like I made this big change and it's like, it's the car accident's fault. it's not like me. It's like, look over there. That's why I made the change. It wasn't like me desperately like needing to like share something true and real within me. It's over there. That's why I did it.
Well, I mean, we had that globally with the pandemic. We're like, no, I didn't always have this. It's this pandemic. It's making me change. it's making me address these like really deep inner problems that I've been ignoring so desperately for so long.
Yeah, exactly. This isn't something real and true and honest within me. It's a pandemic. yeah, I think that's so right. Yeah, totally. There's something there. it's like, look over there. Yeah.
Do you watch RuPaul's Drag Race?
Yeah. Look over there.
Yeah. Had to be on the same page there. So what has been the process of trusting in your style? Like when you first started releasing and sharing those images, like, was there a lot of fear when you were first starting to share those?
Yeah. I think it's like, you know, because the place that we usually like start sharing is social media, and it is always like a bit weird to be like, okay, for like, you know, X number of years, I've shared this thing, and now I'm just gonna switch roo and share this totally different thing. Like, you've all known me and followed me for like this thing that you like, and now I'm gonna give you something. You know, it's like
that you didn't ask for.
Yeah, exactly. You ordered a steak off the menu, and now I'm gonna give you chicken fingers. So. Sorry. Hope you like it.
Who doesn't love chicken fingers?
Yeah, who wouldn't want chicken fingers? Who, when they order a delightful steak, wouldn't be happy with a plate of chicken fingers? Yeah, but I mean, I think, you know, for one, I think what I learned is that, like, you know, people don't think about you that much and don't care about you that much. So it's okay. You put it out there. They're not going to run screaming for the hills. They'll just quietly unfollow you if they don't like it. That's fine. Mm-hmm. It's not that big of a deal. You know, so I mean, like, it was scary, and I think I built it up in my head a lot more than I needed to. Cause like the people who liked it and the people who didn't left, and people who were like just my friends were like, oh, cool. You know?
Yeah.
Interesting, weird. Okay. and I think, you know, everyone else just like got used to it, and like most people are just like, oh yeah, this is like the art you make, you know. Most people are just, or like, really what happened, like honestly, like the algorithm is just so slow at actually showing people anything, is that like most people don't even see it until you've been making it for like 6 months or a year, and so by then they're like, oh, that's what she makes. And then they look back and they're like, oh, she's been making this forever. Oh, I've got to get on board.
Right.
Oh, I did. I'm behind the times.
I was very curious, like, when this started. So I scrolled back and back and back on your Instagram, and I found your early portraits. I was like, oh, holy shit. So different.
I know, sometimes I'm like, should I archive it? Like, should I get rid of it? But I'm like, I kind of like that it's like this.
I love seeing the evolution. And like, I really loved your pieces that were like the scribbles, and then saying like, this piece of art has decided that it is not art. It's too much pressure, and it doesn't want to be art anymore. Like,
yeah.
I love those.
I actually want to like revisit those ones a little bit. I kind of want to make like bigger versions of those ones, because I feel like that's a good like expression of, I feel like, I don't know. Yeah, I think I've got more to say on those pieces.
Those really spoke to me. I love them. Especially like the ones that are like, whoever buys this art is a beautiful person. You're just manipulating your viewers.
Well, I feel like that's like capitalism in a nutshell.
That's what, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I bought this thing. I spent money on it. Therefore, I am X.
Yeah, exactly, right? So that's what, like, that's why we buy paintings, is because, like, you know, we want it to say something about us, or that's like part of the reason of like why capitalism might say you bought a painting,
right?
Because you're beautiful and intelligent, and yeah, you want it to like augment your personality. Anyway, that's like the cynic in me. So that's, so yeah, it's, I mean, this painting to say like, the person who bought this painting is attractive and pretty and smarter than you. So
I loved what you said about like, people don't think about you that much, as much as you think that they will. Like, we, how much we build it up in our heads. I mean, I remember the first time, it was just like a blog post for my business that I was gonna post, and I had it in my head that like, either people are going to absolutely hate it, or they were going to love it, and they were going to want to work with me immediately, and it was gonna like change everything. This one blog post.
Yeah.
And like, thinking back on it now, I'm just like, no, honey. Like, sweet baby, no. Like, no one's gonna care. Like, three people are gonna read it. Two of them are your parents.
Yeah. Just, yes. Like,
get it out there.
Oh, I mean, your parents read it. That's mean. Bravo.
That might be generous. It's probably just my mom.
Right. And she just skimmed it, let's be honest. But I mean, yeah, like, truly, like, you know, like, getting people to like really actually care, like, it's, you know, like, they do a bit. Like, honestly, I mean, you know, they do care, but it's not as much as we think, as we build up in our head. They do, you know, like, so when you're making these big changes, or if you, like, you know, experiment with something that feels like, you know, because creative fear is real and it's big and it's daunting and it's, you know, it's very real and it's a lot, but then you actually put it out there and it's just like, you know, it's fart in the wind.
Yeah. Even if people like really love it, obviously they might buy it, but like, even if they just love it, they'll like it, they might comment on it, but they won't think about it the way that you think about it. It'll just, yeah, like you said, fart in the wind, there it goes. Like,
yeah, and you know, you're right, like someone might like really engage at it and like, you know, look at it and like really like have a moment with it, and it might stick with them, like, you never know, like that's totally a possibility. But like, the vast majority of the time, like,
right, it's, we're, you know, just scrolling, we're just
scrolling. Yeah, it's usually what happens. Yeah.
Tell me more about your process with Horror Scoops. How has it been to start integrating more writing into your creative practice?
Yeah, so Horror Scoops was such a funny thing that I stumbled upon. I never expected to become an astrologer. But apparently I am now, and it's like the greatest thing ever. I am loving every second of it. Because I get to play around with writing. It's so funny because it's actually just like, okay, did you ever have like a micro blog that you wrote in like in your teens, or
yes,
what were they called? Nixopia, or like Tumblr. Yeah, a lot of people had Tumblr. For some reason, everyone at my high school had Diary Land.
I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, I know, it wasn't a big one. Everyone had, anyway, so I had a Diary Land diary where I would write these little bits. So everyone else wrote, like, you know, like what the teachers did that was mean, or what the other kids were up to, or, you know, like their emotions and cute boys or cute girls or whatever. But I would write these things of absolute like nonsensical microfiction about, like, you know, characters with like pants made of lemonade and goldfish with psychic powers that like melted into birthday cakes. Like, I don't know, like whatever, just, you know, stream of consciousness nonsense. And, you know, so all my friends would just be like, okay, all right. And, so, you know, and that was just that. And I would, you know, occasionally turn in something like that for like an English class project or something. But, you know, I've always like had these bits of writing that were like that I did. And I always really loved doing it. And it was just like something, you know, in my back pocket, like, time to time, I would like take it out and play around and write some absurdist poetry or something. Now getting to like write these Horror Scoops every week is so much fun. It's an absurd volume of work, but it's
a lot.
Yeah.
Every week. It's just like, it's so much. And I love them every time. I look for my clapper crumb and I'm just like, right on the nose. I love it. I think one time you actually said something about the dentist, and I had just come home from the dentist, and I was just like, Heather's an oracle. Heather Heather knows exactly. Well-renowned astrologer.
Yeah. No, I'd actually been, I had come to Seattle and was following you. Yeah. If only. If only I had the powers.
Did you find that, like, so for me, sharing drawings and scribbles on social media doesn't bother me at all. I'm just like, yeah, here's my scribbledness. Here's my nonsense. But when it comes to writing, there's like another level of vulnerability there that I'm just like, maybe later. Like, I just, it's taken me a lot more work to start to share my writing just in like my writer's group. And so I'm just curious if you experienced something similar, or like, since you had already been doing it, you know, like you said, when you were younger, it just like kind of flowed a little easier for you.
Well, okay. I think as like the horoscopes themselves, I have no like fear of sharing those. I love them. I think they're just fun and silly and like wonderful. And it's like my absolute pleasure to like toss them out into the world, and you know, people really enjoy them, and therefore it's just like the greatest like thing to like gift them to people. I mean, it's like a ton of work, and I'm just like giving them out for free, and it's you know, it's so it's just really a labor of love to make these, just, you know, for the people, for a laugh, for fun. So it's just like, it's truly just a joy. But as for like, you know, so, but it's caused me to, you know, think about doing a lot more writing. And actually, even before this, I'd been doing some more, fiction writing as well, and sharing that, you know, fills me with this sort of perilous dread that is, you know, I'd rather sort of like stick a fork in my own spleen and rip it out and eat it than share it with another human being. Yeah.
Something I like relate that. To that.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, words are just so vulnerable. I mean, sharing all creativity, especially if it like means something to you, is vulnerable. But yeah, there is like, when it comes to just like trying to convey human experience in fiction and memoir and whatever, yeah, it's like another level of vulnerability that just feels so yucky.
Yeah, and I'm trying to get to a point where I can be like, hello, I am an artist and a writer. Yeah, that's a word. It's not coming out fluidly yet. Writer. It'll happen, maybe.
It'll come.
Yeah. Working on things. But yeah, it's like wonderful that at least these like absurdist, you know, 12 ridiculous bits of microfiction are getting out into the world every week. Mm-hmm. I mean, micro reality, they're not fiction. They're very real. They're destiny. They're real. They come to my brain directly from outer space, from the stars, mm-hmm. and they're real. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. You mentioned that like the process of coming up with that much content every week has been like a lot about just like letting go of expectations and opening yourself up. Can you talk more about that? Explain what your process is?
Well, now, see, at the beginning you gave me the idea of Mad Libs. I'm gonna go down that well. I'm gonna go fill in some adverbs and some adjectives and nouns. Yeah. So no one else is allowed to look at Mad Libs because
Heather is taking all the Mad Libs and using them.
okay, no, but for real, So I've definitely been in that place, you know, where you're trying to sort of like tense up and like squeeze out an idea like really hard and like mm-hmm. force creativity by sort of like pushing it out, and that doesn't work. It definitely
creative constipation.
Yeah, I was trying to like avoid saying that.
I mean, for me, it's all I could picture.
Yeah, you can see my face making the creative constipation face. So. Yeah. Creative constipation. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, that just really doesn't work. The like the tensing and the forcing. It definitely
So you brought in some laxatives.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of fiber. You have to have a high and mentally fibrous diet. Mm-hmm. That metaphor works, maybe. Sure. Yeah, we'll just pretend it does. A lot of mental Metamucil. Mental Musil. I'm trying to think of what mental Musil would be or look like. Anyway, sorry, this is getting silly now. We've both gotten very loose. Oh no. In the subject of mental Musil, that's okay. Anyway.
I expected nothing less from this conversation. I didn't think I'd be able to get through a conversation with you without it devolving into something silly.
Something as silly as mental laxatives. Okay. anyway, so we were talking about my process for horoscopes.
Yes.
So you just take two scoops of Mexlac, and you stir that in to a cup of warm water. And anyway, no.
There are no clumps.
Yeah, no clumps. You don't want a clumpy. Yeah, you don't want a clumping. You do not want a clumping. Okay. I think we've composed ourselves, come back down to reality, and are ready to talk about process again. Like making horoscopes is like it's an intense like volume of work. It's like you know, if I come up with like two a day, that's good. Or if I'm procrastinating and I have to write, you know, 12 pieces of microfiction on a Sunday. That's a lot. I do have like a notes app in my phone that's like full of potential scoops, as well as like, you know, bits and pieces written here and there. And, you know, whenever something comes to me, like I write it down. So they're, you know, I am collecting them along the way. And, you know, certain friends know that, like, you know, when something silly is said, sometimes I'll just like, and, like write it down and be like, sorry, like,
this, gotta write this down.
This is going to be material. Sorry about it. You know, just because it's just so much that I've gotta like take from everywhere. Yeah. And you know, it's just it's too much to like let anything sort of slide. But you know, for the most part, the vast majority of them, really what I do is, and actually I learned that this is really similar to how actual astrologers work. I learned this. I did an interview with a woman from the CBC, and she told me that this is like what actual astrologers do. So basically what I do is I meditate, I'll take some deep breaths, I'll relax, and you know, I have a little like routine, and I'll like clear my mind, and I'll like just like wait for some like images and whatnot to like come into my mind, and wait, you know, kind of like let them congeal, let like sort of a story unfold, and see what comes up. And apparently that's very similar to what like actual astrologers do. They'll like get into a meditative state.
Actually channeling from the stars.
I mean, you know, I guess maybe I am a new astrologer. Oh my God. But you know, I think that's like that's really interesting. I think it's just like the only difference is, you know, sort of like the approach, the intention, the
right.
You know, sort of the like impetus behind it. You know, sort of like I imagine an actual astrologer would be like, all right, you know, Sagittarius, go brain, or you know, or they'll have some like ideas based on I don't know. I actually don't know anything about astrology, so I don't know what. I don't want to sully my mind with actual astrology knowledge. So I do have some astrology books that I've picked up along the way from like used bookstores, just because I think they're interesting, and a few other reasons. There's like some peripheral astrology research I want to do, but not about the actual signs themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I don't know. I imagine that like astrologers, you know, they do some research about what the stars are doing, and then for the like nitty gritty of the sign, they like let you know, get meditative, let like the ideas flow to them. Anyway,
right.
It's like very similar to that for like the vast majority of them. I like just like get quiet, let some ideas come, and try, you know, if I like panic and try to force it, it's gonna go wrong. It's not gonna be good. But if I'm like calm and I just like trust that something will come, it's a lot about that trust, and it's a lot about being calm, being loosey-goosey, and trusting, which is scary to, you know, sometimes when it's like, you know, I post them on Monday and sometimes it's the weekend and I'm like, oh crap. Oh no.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. You know, like being loose and trying to be like chill then is not always easy.
Yeah. That trust is definitely hard to come by. So good for you for coming up with that routine and just channeling your creativity and like learning to trust. I mean, obviously, I'm sure it's not like always easy, but
and sometimes I'm like not able to, and that's when I go to the well of the notes app and like the other ones. Like I try not to use those unless like that's kind of the like emergency parachute, you know, like
right.
The backup one. That's the one you use like when the other one doesn't open. But yeah. Yeah,
awesome.
usually the trusting works. Usually the calm, flow, meditative, relaxation, usually they come.
Yeah.
Some days that doesn't happen. And that's when you have backup plans.
That's when you have a backup.
Exactly.
Oh, so good. What would you tell creatives who think that their work is too out there to appeal to people?
Oh, that's such a good question. Because I think we're actually in like the absolute best time for people who make work that is out there and weird and niche. Like, I think if you are making work that is really, really weird, or out there, or strange. Like, I think now is, like, I think we're really lucky right now. Because I think even, like, you know, even 20 years ago, I think there was a lot of pressure to sort of appeal to everyone with your work. But I think right now, like, you don't need to appeal to everyone. You don't need everyone to be your fan. Like, all you really need is a very small group of people who dig your work and who occasionally buy it, and you can make a living from it. You know, it doesn't take, you don't need like 2 bazillion followers to make a living from your work anymore, you know. Or really, it's not even about that. Maybe all you want is to just like put it out there for fun, like, you know, that's also just fine. You know, I think we live in an amazing time for work that is out there. There are so many like weirdos waiting to accept you and who aren't just waiting to accept you, but are waiting to feel accepted by you, you know, feel the acceptance that they're going to feel by seeing your work. You know, your work is going to make them feel accepted, and they're going to make them feel seen, because because of what you're saying, you know, like your work, it might be so out there and so weird and so ridiculous and so silly that, you know, someone is going to be like, oh, wow, I thought it was just me that felt this, but oh my gosh, it's this oddball too. It's this mm-hmm. absolute weirdo as well. And I think that's definitely something I found in horoscopes. You know, a lot of the people who are the biggest fans of it are people who are like, oh, this is like the way I think. This is mm-hmm. like, this is like me. This is like me and my friends. And mm-hmm. it's the people who send their horoscopes to, you know, all their friends every Monday. And that's the people who, you know, think the same way and who are big weirdos too and who are big goofballs and you know, just are probably very similar to me, and we'd probably be pals and hang out if we ever met, you know, because
yeah.
they're the same way and are probably like, you know, big loser nerds in high school. And, you know, we're probably very similar types of people, and that's the power of art, is that it like connects us and makes us feel seen, and makes, you know, it like it builds a little bridge between something I've felt and something you felt.
Mm.
And when you put it out there, you know, you're putting this little bridge, this little invitation out there. And so I think it's such a great time to be making work that's out there. So yeah, go yeah. for it.
Absolutely.
Make it weirder. Make it even weirder.
Yeah. I think also like people are so tired of like the curated perfect imagery of like what things are supposed to be, because like yes. how many people actually fit into those categories? Zero. Nobody fits into those categories. Mm-hmm. Even the people who are saying that they like fit into those categories, like we are all weird little animals, and you know, the more you can like show your weird little animal self to other people, like the more you'll connect on that, like, oh, thank God, I thought I was like in this human suit and I had to act a certain way, but like you're showing me that I don't have to act like this, and like, oh, thank God.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like such a relief.
Mm-hmm.
The second someone like gives you permission. Sorry, I just burped into the microphone. hopefully that didn't get caught. but yeah, yeah, you're just like giving them permission and like a beautiful like invitation to be weird and to be, yeah, not the normal thing that has probably like been killing them and been like painful to be, and to like
mm-hmm.
been like a horrible pressure in their lives to be, like any sort of wonderful invitation to like jump ship out of that like painful existence. Oh my God. It's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah. Good.
Oh. I want to see well, the imaginary art we're talking about. These out there people. Oh my God. Sounds yeah. great.
Okay, so we're wrapping up. At the end of every episode, I like to ask if there's anything ugly that you've made this week or recently. Obviously, it doesn't have to specifically be ugly. It could just be something that you let go of the outcome while making it. Sounds like you do that frequently with horoscopes. So maybe something outside of that. Yeah, anything ugly you've made?
Yeah, yeah. I made a painting recently, like one of my portraits with text on it. I actually like found one that I had made, and I really liked the text on it, but the portrait just, oh gosh, it just didn't work out. It just looked really, really, really bad. The face looked just, I don't know, she looked too like cutesy, and like I wanted her to look cool, you know, like I wanted her to look, I don't know, a certain way, and she just didn't. But you know, like, and I used to like think I just had to paint everything like one time, like I had like one shot to like make a painting.
Yeah.
But then I just redid it. I just did it over again. Like, I don't know why I thought, like every painting had, like, one energy to it. Like, I just had to, like, I had, like, one go at it. Like, it only had, like, this one life force, and I just had to, like, do it, and, like, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
I realized that, like, this weird misconception I had. Yeah, I was just wrong. I could just redo it. I could just make a different version of that painting.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I think so many writers, too, think that. I mean, painters and other kinds of artists, but, like, writers think, like, especially first-time writers, I have to write a book, like, and writing a book is the thing. And they don't really think about the fact that, like, you're gonna write so many drafts of the same book, and it's just, like, it's not just one shot. You get to, like, redo it and edit it and revise it, and it's, like, this whole long process. Like, you get to redo it as many times as you think it's ready and necessary. Like, yeah.
Like, you can just, if you've made something bad, you can just take the part that's good. Like, the text I wrote was good.
Mm-hmm.
There was one salvageable thing in this painting. And just throw out the ugly part.
Uh-huh.
And then just make a new one. And the new one was fine. It was a good painting. It went from a C minus to an A minus. It wasn't great. It wasn't breaking any records, any new ground, but it was fine. It was good. Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun. I laughed very hard. Yes. I'm gonna go have some Metamucil now.
Just really craving it after that conversation.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Is there anything you want to announce, anything coming up, or anywhere people should go to support you?
People can follow me on Instagram at Heather Buchanan, HEATHERBUCHANAN, or at horrorscoops, horror.scoops. That's pretty much it. You know, I'm someday going to have the confidence to have a short story somewhere. That may be true. Who knows? It could happen.
We will see.
Or I'll eat my own spleen. One of the two things. One of those two things.
Well, let's hope for the former. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Keep it ugly, everybody. The Ugly Podcast is created by me, Lauren Alexander of Scribe and Sunshine. It is produced and sort of edited, also by me, and written and directed by absolutely nobody. If you like the podcast, be sure to rate and leave a review on your preferred platform and share with the creative people in your life. If you're interested in learning more about what I do, head to scribeandsunshine.com to learn more about my Ugly Art 101 course, my Perfectionism Workshop, my editing services, and the Writer's Helm, which is an online community for writers co-captained by myself and Gabby Goodlow. As always, keep it ugly.